Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another incredible episode of JoJo's Empowering Journey. I'm your host, JoJo. To all my listeners on the show, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Okay, so today we have another special guest on the show. This individual is a passionate educator who is on a mission. Disappointed with the experience his older children had in the traditional education system, he wanted to make a change. He knew there had to be a better way than the fun teaching strategies and overbearing style utilized in far too many classrooms with an engaging presentation, style, and exciting curriculum. He has successfully inspired thousands of children to actively seek out information and take delight in learning new things. He has extensive experience in teaching STEM curriculum in a variety of settings of homeschool, charter, and public schools. He has become exceedingly popular in the community and is known for his passion, enthusiasm, and dynamic personality. His experience includes a dual major in elementary education and special education, but even more valuable in his extensive experience in sales. He has built a successful education business in Southern California and is a steadfast advocate for choices in education. What makes this individual even more unique and inspiring, his organizations include Education and Equal Enrichment Education. He's working to expand this program and benefit more low-income families in the community. Without further ado, please welcome Mr. James Does It All to the podcast.
Hello.
How are you, James?
I'm doing fantastic today. How are you?
I'm good. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in education in the STEM curriculum?
You know, it's funny. My background actually started about 8 years ago. So, prior to that, I did not have any direct experience in the education field, at least not with children. I worked in sales and sales management, so I did a lot of training for my teams. And so I did take on an educator role in that capacity, but I hadn't worked directly with children in education up until about 8 years ago. And I had said for a long time that, you know, it cannot be as hard as so many are making it appear or claim that it is. It was time to put my money where my mouth was and do something about it. So that's what I did.
Right. And for those of you guys that don't know what STEM is, STEM is an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and math education. I was just putting that out there for those of you that don't know what that means. So, Mr. James, what inspired you to become an educator in the field of STEM?
Well, I had, in a way, I kind of fell into it by accident. I had been laid off from my position as a division manager with the big company. They basically sold off my division and eliminated my position. So wow. I was stuck at the time, and this was back when the job market was just abysmal. So you had 200 people applying for one position, and I was not getting callbacks because the first thing that they did to eliminate some of the candidates was look at whether or not they had a degree. And I did not. So even though I had verifiable experience and proven results in my positions, they wouldn't even look at it. I couldn't get an interview. So I was at a change in career. And as I was, I decided I was going to do something that I thought I could be good at, but also that I could feel like I was making a difference, you know?
Right. That's what it's all about.
Right. So I was like, you know, there's got to be something more than just going to work. I want to feel like I'm doing something that's meaningful. And I started looking at education, and I looked at the experience that my older sons had. I have three adult boys, and their experience was not good. They did not have a good experience in the traditional education model of public school, and they did not continue past high school. They had no desire to continue. I looked back to my experience in school, and although I was good at it, I hated it. I didn't like being there. It wasn't engaging. I just wasn't interested.
Right.
And so I never continued past up to that point. And so I thought there's got to be a better way of doing it. I'm going to go in and I'm going to make a difference. And initially, naively, I thought I was going to go in and do the traditional route, work for the school district, and make a change from the inside. And I quickly learned that that wasn't going to happen. There's too much establishment there that they want to keep the status quo. And if you're trying to make changes, you're going to make other people have to make changes too. And they didn't want to do that. So I started looking at other avenues in which to provide, you know, what I thought would be a more engaging experience for students. Mm-hmm. And I just accidentally fell into a STEM company that was doing classes, after school classes at some of the local elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And I started working part time for them. I said, you know what, let me just get some practical experience in the classroom.
Yeah.
And within a few months, I had made changes to their curriculum, making it my own, and started really taking off with it, adding to it, making it even better than what they were giving me to do. And then I fell into a homeschooling campus, as it's called. And it was weird at first because it was introduced to me like, hey, we're going to send you there. It's kind of different. It's a little weird. And instead of doing like a 4 to 6 week program, you're going to do a full semester of classes. And they meet at this church. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. And I'm like, I'm game. Let's do it. And I saw within 2 weeks, I was all in. I said, this model and how these kids interacted with each other was so different and so positive that I just knew, I'm all, this is where I can make a change and actually have an impact. And so I went all in. That the company didn't want to do it. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to go do it myself. And so
that's great.
Life savings in, and here we are, several years later, and we're all over Southern California now. So it's been awesome.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's making a big impact. That really is. I mean, you know, education is very important, you know, especially when you're younger and, you know, trying to go to college as you get older. A lot of people they miss out on education because, you know, a lot of the school systems nowadays, it just seems like they don't really care about a kid. The kids are there basically for the paycheck instead of, you know, really doing what they're supposed to do. And that, I mean, it was kind of like that even when I was in school as well, for the most part. A lot of people, if you didn't know what you were doing by the, like, you know, you didn't get it the first time, like, nobody was there to really just help you and to continue, you know? So,
yeah. And it's so sad that it's that way.
It is. It's for sure. How do you approach teaching STEM curriculum in a way that is engaging and accessible to all students?
I think the way I started doing it is I started looking at it as more of a performance than a lesson. And so when I'm in front of a class full of students, I'm performing. Mr. James is on stage and I have to captivate them. If they're not engaged and hanging on my every word, they're going to tune out. They're going to start, daydreaming, bored. It's just in the delivery. So it's all about making it a performance, exaggerated movements on my part, my, inflection in my tone, building up the suspense in something and like, what do you think's going to happen now? Give me a guess. And, they start responding to that. They get excited about what we're learning. And the best part is we're not taking a deep dive into some of these subjects. We're covering the basics in these classes. And what's wonderful is what the goal is to get them to be curious. And they actually then will go and seek out more information about what we learned. And so when I see them the next week, they come in for the class and they're like, oh, I learned this and this and this and this, and they're telling me things I may not have known. That's when it's like, we're having that impact on them. Now they're excited about learning something new.
Make them have fun.
Exactly. It's about having fun, having them be entertained and be excited about coming back again.
Right. Can you share any specific strategies or techniques that you use to inspire students' interest and curiosity in STEM subjects?
I think so. A lot of it is I ask lots of questions, and
right.
I typically, in most cases, I don't expect students to raise their hand. I'm like, hey, if you have a guess at this answer, shout it out. And I encourage them to take chances. So when they may not know the answer, well, give me a guess. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Because we can learn from the guesses too, you know, because they might guess something. I'm like, well, that's a good guess, but that would work a little bit more like this. And that way they can learn about what their, you know, how their guess might or might not apply to what the question asked was, you know, and then we can go and then have somebody else give an idea. And as they all start getting in there, even the quietest, shyest student can now start saying something because they're not necessarily being called out as wrong. Or if they are, it's in a fun way. So it's like, well, kind of close, not quite what we're looking for. What do you got over here? Anybody else got another guess? And so it's basically keeping it lively and mm-hmm. and moving, feeling like it's moving quickly. And that way they're kind of getting more involved in it. They're a participant in what we're doing rather than just a spectator.
Right. Very important. What challenges have you encountered in teaching STEM curriculum and what and how did you overcome the obstacles?
In the beginning, especially, it was, it was a learning curve for myself. I'm actually not a big science or engineering guy. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn those things. I remember the first time I taught a video game design class. I had mm-hmm. no idea how to build a video game, but but I learned. And in doing so, I mean, learned as I was doing it. And we created some amazing video games that semester. And it was my first time doing it, but we learned it together. And it was fun to see the kids learning along with me on things. Cause mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh, hold on. Oh, what do we do here? Let me look. And I'd kind of give them that look like, let me look. And they kind of laugh and we look it up and they'd give ideas as well. Mm-hmm. And so in the beginning, it was learning the material myself. But even that, I took it as a way to make it fun as even I was learning it with them in some cases. But I still get like some classes that I may have one of my instructors do because that's kind of their expertise. 3D printing is one of them. Mm-hmm. I struggle with that 3D concept, you know, still that geometry is still not one of my strong points. Mm-hmm. But I'm learning from him how to teach those classes and stuff. And so it's fun. So it's a continuous learning process. So that's probably the biggest struggle is learning some of the material myself. Mm-hmm. And then of course you got the back end of the business too, which has definitely been a learning curve.
Right. In your opinion, why is it important for students to develop skills in the STEM fields?
It's the future. That's where we're going. So, you know, when we look at some of the things that, you know, we may have learned, at least, you know, looking back at, you know, when I was, you know, in school and stuff, we had to learn the periodic table. And why did we have to learn the periodic table? Well, because there wasn't an easy reference sitting right in our pocket that had access to you know, right. Now we do. We have our devices that we can access essentially all the information in the world at our fingertips. And right. So the needs of education have changed. And if we're going in that route, we have to start preparing kids for that, at least getting them curious about it, but also making sure they can see themselves pursuing that in the future. Because there's so many, they've never been exposed to it. Then, you know, if we've never been exposed to something, how could we ever envision ourselves doing it in the future? So that's a big part of it. It's just, that's what the future is going to be. We need to bring the future to the kids so that they're prepared.
Oh, and how do you integrate real world applications and industry collaboration into your STEM curriculum?
That's a great question. So we do, as much as possible, we do try to get guest speakers to come in and talk to our classes. We've had, you know, when we've done, because we will do all sorts of subjects. When, you know, when we have a gardening class, we have a fun exotic gardening class. So the things you don't normally think about, we try to grow. And we actually bring in master gardeners to come in and talk to the students and do a lesson with them.
Wow.
You know, we bring in for our life skills class, we've brought in a real estate agent to talk about real estate investing. Wow. And with them. So we try to bring in the experts in the fields to come in. Video game design was a great one. We actually had someone who is a game developer with a major, you know, video game, you know, company to come in and talk to the students. And, you know, it was great. The students were able to pick their brain and ask questions. And so we try to show that these aren't just concepts. There's real people who actually do this stuff, and they may not look like what you think they look like. You know, they look like normal people like the rest of us. And, you know, they could look like anything, and they do this. So we should try to show a lot of diversity in our classes. And, you know, we have a diverse staff of instructors. So that's nice. So they see people of all different, you know, backgrounds and personalities and, cultures and stuff, presenting the material to them, in a neutral way, but they're seeing these people that are behind it. The goal is to make sure they can see that it's not like this person was necessarily special in some way that they are not. They're special in that they put the hard work in, but it's available to anyone who does that.
Right. Mr. James, I have to say, I love what you're doing. Like, that's incredible. Can you share any success stories of students who have excelled in STEM due to your teaching methods?
We have several students who are now going to college. And it's one of those misconceptions with homeschoolers that they, you know, they're hermits that, you know, just stay at home and don't go out. They actually have so many opportunities. And we have some students that have, you know, full academic scholarships that are going pursuing careers in engineering, architecture, or in things that we didn't even teach necessarily, but hopefully that we inspired them to pursue something that they were interested in. And so, you know, a lot of what we cover in our classes, even though it might be a robotics class, but we really do talk about find something that you're excited about and you're passionate about and pursue that. Don't go for higher education looking for the dollar, because you're going to regret it. You'll not be happy. Find something that you're passionate about. The money will happen. That'll take care of itself. Find something you're excited about. And then as a secondary thought, okay, now what can I do with that to make money, to, you know, to earn an income? And I think that's what helps them out. But we do have a lot of them who are pursuing things. Having only been in business for about 8 years, we're only just starting to have, I'm starting to have students that are just starting to get to those college years. But we have a lot of them that have pursued, while they're in high school, pursuing taking college courses at the same time. So there's a lot of students that I've had who are now pursuing an associate's degree, and they'll have their associate's degree at least at the same time or before they actually finish high school. And so they're driven, because we show them that it's, by showing that it's fun, you know, that when learning is fun, that translates to any subject. And now they start seeing that they can start taking charge of their own education, if that makes sense.
Yes. What advice would you give to educators who are looking to incorporate more STEM curriculum into their teaching?
It's not hard. I would say there's so many resources out there, but many times what I would really suggest is to find someone, and generally it's going to be with a private company, you know, like myself, but who is already doing it and is popular in their area, and pick their brain, see if they can come in and do a sample day in your classroom. And you can see their presentation style, because that's what it's all about. The content is secondary to the presentation. If the presentation is not there, it doesn't matter what the content is. They're not picking it up anyway. So
right.
Learning how to present it, that's the main thing. And I encourage every educator, because I know how much of a difference it's made for me. Educator should be taking some sales classes. Because,
right.
you know, if you can't get the students to buy what you're selling them, and that's what you're doing. If you're presenting information, you're selling them this information. If they don't buy it, then you're wasting your time. They're not, you know, so having that presentation of being able to present it in a way that's engaging and is hooking them in, drawing them into it, that's the trick.
Great. That's definitely some good advice. Are there any specific projects or activities that you find particularly effective in capturing students' interest?
I think mainly, I guess, again, it goes back to the presentation. I don't sit down during my classes. So I'm constantly moving around. So I'm going around, and the students have to follow me as I'll walk around the room as I'm doing it. So they... like they're like, oh, what's he doing now? And so it constantly keeps them engaged, even just from body movements,
right.
moving around the room. I will use props. I will use all sorts of things. I will, I'll do something that's, you know, where I make funny movements because I'm over exaggerating something. That right.
Keep them interested. Very true. I mean, that's important, you know?
Right. And so it's about not being, self-conscious in the classroom. Have a character that, you know, I have a character that I play. Mr. James is a character that I play in the classroom. It's a version of me that I am mm-hmm. in the classroom. And Mr. James does silly things. He makes funny faces as he's talking. He does, you know, he's always moving around and talking in a certain cadence or a certain tone that kind of draws them in. And then boom, then there's a surprise and laughs, and we're having fun in the classroom. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Right. That's what it's all about. How do you ensure that you are promoting diversity and inclusivity in your STEM classrooms?
I think the biggest part is we make it very, very known. It's on our website. It's, you know, anywhere, we let it be known that everything that we do in the classroom is politically, religiously, and ideologically neutral. We are not there to discuss anything except what the subject is. If we're doing a robotics class, we're talking about robotics, and we're just mm-hmm. having fun. And it doesn't matter what religion somebody is. It doesn't matter what... you know, politics they believe in. We're here having a shared love of robotics, and that's what we're going to do. So it's going to bring us together mm-hmm. for that. And we're going to be accepting of everyone's ideas when it comes to that. We have one of the things that I think is that a lot of people find interesting and some kind of look at kind of weird at first is we have a larger range of ages in our classes. So we might do a robotics class that has grades 2 through 8 in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all together, so they're intermixed. We might have a second grader and an eighth grader and then all grades in between. And mm-hmm. it just works because they start seeing that, well, it doesn't matter their age. They still have an interest in this. It allows mm-hmm. those that are older to take more of a leadership role if they're paired up with a younger student. So they can take a little more of a leadership role. But we do make mm-hmm. it clear everybody has to have input into whatever, you know, project we're working on. So everybody's interested in it. And so they actually learn to work with different people, because in real life, we have to collaborate with people of all walks of life. You know, that's the real world. in the classes, we typically, you know, we try to pair them up on things sometimes, and we tell them every week we're going to have a different partner because we're not always going to be paired with the same person all the time. Not, it won't happen in the workplace. It won't happen, you know, in school. It doesn't, it just, the real world is you can't control who you might have to work with. So we need to learn to work with everybody. And so we do that. And then of course, again, through our staff, we have a very diverse staff, and, you know, my number one criteria for any staff member is, you know, can you have personality that you can project in the classroom? And, you know, so we have all ages, you know, we have, you know, like I said, all backgrounds, and it's always a compliment when someone says, wow, you have a really diverse staff. I'm like, oh, well, thank you. It wasn't necessarily we didn't go seeking out, we need to check these boxes. It was just, we didn't care other than if someone was able to do the job right. And so we ended up with a very diverse staff that we work well together. We're a nice team, and we have fun together too. So we're friends as well as colleagues.
That's wonderful. Can you tell us about that business that you have worked so hard to build?
Sorry, can you repeat that? It broke up just a little bit.
Can you tell us about the successful education business you have worked so hard to build?
So when starting off, it was just, started hiring a few instructors. We actually started off pretty quickly at a few different locations, and we kept growing. And so we added to our offerings, our different programs and stuff. And we started becoming very popular, especially in the homeschool community. They talk, and they all started talking about, oh, Mr. James, Include Education. We need that at our campus as well. And so we get calls, hey, we want to add you over here at our location. Mm-hmm. And so we kept growing and growing. The interesting thing was when, you know, like everybody else, we had to, you know, we had the COVID hit, and everything changed. So we had to pivot to online overnight. Like all of a sudden, we had to do everything virtually. The charter schools that we contract with, they all said, look, no more funding if it's not online. So we had to quickly pivot to that. And a testament to my team, like everybody came together. We found out on a Thursday. By Monday, we were running online classes and kind of figuring it out as we went, but we actually did. I was really proud of what we put together within such a short period of time. And we refined it during that time to make it better as we went. It allowed us to survive when some of our competitors did not. Some of them went out of business, couldn't survive. We did, and we've come back now bigger than ever. But one of the cool things is, because everything we do is mobile, we take the lessons to where the students are. So we can go anywhere. We've done, we do everything from homeschool classes and churches. We've gone to people's homes because they have a little group that goes there at their home, and they all get together. We've gone there. We've done after school classes. We've done workshops at schools, camps, even birthday parties. We've even done some events for adults and getting the adults into it. The different scout troops, the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts and Trail Life, a few others. So we'll go and, we can bring it to wherever the programs are needed. And we've grown now so that we're offering classes in Riverside County, Orange County, and San Diego County down in Southern California, three counties. It's huge, massive area. And we're able to do that, but we're looking at ways to expand that to new areas. And one of the things that I am most excited about is we're trying to find a way to get our programs into schools where it may be a more low-income community. And because those schools, even if they allowed us to come in and offer an after-school program, for us just to cover our costs on it, those families may not be able to afford the tuition to attend. So they can't, they're not sending their students to those types of programs. Those kids are missing out. They're the ones that need it the most. So we were trying to think of how can we get these programs in front of the kids that otherwise would not have those opportunities. And so we've put together a sponsor program. And so we're going to be launching that with this next year, in which we are looking for core company sponsors. So a company can sponsor a program and you know, in exchange for some advertisement, we'll advertise for that company as a hero in the community. And then we can set it up so that those students, you know, income qualified, can attend for free. And that way they can get these experiences that they just otherwise, the families just wouldn't be able to afford to send them to.
Right. How do you plan to expand your programs to reach all these low income families?
Well, the sponsor program is going to be the big way to do it. And we see that as an opportunity to really grow and actually scale the business at the same time and reach more students. Once we've shown that for a sponsor that it is it's advantageous for them, that it's money well spent, not just for the fact that they're doing something good for the community, but also that their name is getting out there in a positive way, and it's basically replaced their advertising as a more effective way to advertise and have the benefit of helping these kids. I think once we do that, that's something that we can expand even beyond our, you know, neck of the woods here. We're going to be putting together a sales team that will go, that will be approaching businesses and showing them the benefits of sponsoring the programs. And with that, I think we can really start growing it to reach more and more of these kids who need it the most. And that's what, and that's really what we want to do, is that's our passion. We want to have a positive impact on as many kids as we possibly can.
That is so wonderful. I do. I absolutely love that. I really do. That's, you're making a big difference, I mean, in the world. And that's, like I said, that's all that matters. And you're trying really hard. And you know, a lot of people aren't even willing to give, you know, give none of their time, not even a little bit of their time, just to help someone else out, you know. And sometimes that's what it's all about. You know, it's not, we need to help each other. We need to, especially the young ones, you know, growing into being adults. I mean, the world's crazy today. You know, like, we need more people that are willing to be in, you know, to go through school and to finish and become successful people in life. And that's what it's about, you know. And you're doing a very good job, I have to say. So what made you decide to become an advocate for choices in education?
Based on the experiences that that my children had and that I had, I look back now and I wish I had known then, when they were in school, what was available. And I just didn't know. I didn't know that there were these other options out there. And so in a way, I feel like I failed them as well as the school system, because I didn't know that there were alternatives. And I think the more choice that there is, the better. Kids are not cookie cutter. They're not cookies. They don't come out of the same cookie cutter. They're not made out of the same mold. They all have their own personalities, their own learning styles, their own struggles, and their own strengths. And if we're, you know, if we take a, you know, just for example, a fifth grade student, and maybe this student, maybe he's behind in reading, so he struggles with reading and is maybe at a third grade level, but maybe he's a genius when it comes to math and should be taking seventh grade math. Well, instead, he's getting fifth grade everything. So he's falling farther and farther behind in reading, and he's being held back in math. Instead, let's give choices where, let's find the program that meets the needs of that student the best. And now he can get the support that he needs in the reading, maybe take a third grade reading class to bolster those skills, and take a seventh grade math class to continue to excel in that area. And and that's just an academic example, but there's, you know, there's some kids that suffer from anxiety, and being in a large classroom isn't going to work for them. They need something that's very small. Why can't we have a program that meets that student's needs? And, you know, we have for, it's, you know, one of those things that's for special needs students, you know, generally, and it's an IEP. So an individualized education plan.
All right.
And my oldest son had one of those, you know, he's on the spectrum. And so he had one, my second son had one, he has ADHD. And, you know, I remember going to the schools, and every time when we would have the IEP meeting, it was like you had to suit yourself up for battle, because you knew it's you're going into combat for your child, because the teacher, the school doesn't want to do the simple little things that they could do. And it was always such a struggle, little simple things. I'm like, this is not that hard what you're being asked to do. And it's a legal document. Why are you arguing? And, you know, and when I started thinking about it, all kids are individuals. Shouldn't we all have an individualized education plan? Because they all learn at a different pace. You know, one student may not learn to read until second grade, even simple words. Well, that's okay. It doesn't mean he's going to be illiterate. It just means he's taking a little bit longer to get there. Give him the support that he needs and he'll get there. And next thing you know, in a couple of years, he's an avid reader, you know? And if we, the more choices, the choices benefit the kids. And if we look at the, I mean, really the organization or organizations, I should say, that oppose choices in that area, it's all the unions. And so the unions will oppose school choice. And if we think about what is the purpose of a union? Well, it's the union's not there to benefit the kids. That's not what their job is. Their job is to benefit the teachers insofar as it benefits the union, right? So in the end, the union wants to keep growing, which means they need more union teachers to be joining the union. Well, if there's more choices, well, those are not all union jobs. That means the union doesn't have as much influence, doesn't have as many teachers, and that hurts the union. Even though I would argue having that choice is not only good for the student. I think that's, I mean, I think that's clear. Having choices where a parent can find the educational options that best fit their child. I think that's a clear winner right there. But I think it benefits the educators as well. The more choices that a teacher has, the better for the teacher as well. You know, we all had those teachers, you know, some of us had more than others, that were, they were just burnt out. They didn't want to be there. They had tried making a change, and now they were, well, I tried, I couldn't. Yeah. So now I'm just here to earn a paycheck. How many of them actually, if they had the opportunity to go to a school where they could actually teach the way they love to teach, would now be energized and become a better educator because now they have choices as well. So to me, choice benefits everyone except the union itself. And that's why the unions will pour millions and millions of dollars of money into opposing choices in education, which to me, right there, I mean, if you're not looking out for the best interest of the child, then, you know, what are you doing? And so the teachers are calling out their own union on that one.
Right. Can you share any examples of how sales experience has positively impacted your work?
Absolutely. So, well, for one, in the classroom was definitely one. I knew how to, you know, having worked in sales successfully, I knew how to put together a presentation. I knew how to kind of set up a little bit and then give and then reveal, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? As a presentation style. And so in the classroom, it benefited big time, but it also benefited as far as being able to communicate effectively what my programs do and the benefits of them. You know, being able to come onto a podcast, you know, such as yours, which is wonderful, by the way, being able to do this and being able to articulate that without without having to worry about, oh, I'm not going to know what to say next. You know, being able to, you know, communicate that helped. Having that sales training, it was a big benefit for me, but also in getting the business to grow. So a lot of that comes from, you know, if you don't know how to communicate with people, including the bank, you know, for one, get the funding for stuff.
Important, yeah.
Right? Be able to communicate with my instructors and being able to train them as well. And some of them may not have sales background, but I can impart on that because I used to do sales trainings as well, training other salespeople. I can train them in that and then also how it applies to education. But in getting, I think that's what's going to be valuable going forward too, is being able to think outside the box. I don't think like a traditional educator. I think in different ways. And I think as well, I think it's kind of ingrained in that sales culture. You know, if you've worked in sales, you're a bit more of a risk taker than others, especially if you worked in a commission only position as I did. You're taking a risk. And so I think that's really benefited me in that I'm not afraid of risk. I try to make it a calculated risk, but I'm not afraid to take chances here and there to see if something works. And sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, I've lost money on, you know, things that I've tried and okay, that one didn't work, but we tried it. Now we know. So now we'll try something new and we keep developing new stuff and, you know, try it out, see if it sticks. If it does, great. If it doesn't, okay, back to the drawing board. We'll keep going. But I think that's
what it's all about. That taking chances.
Yeah, taking chances, I think, is imperative in life, but also in business.
Right. How will you ensure that your STEM curriculum is accessible for families with low income backgrounds?
Again, that's going to go back to those sponsored programs. We have even over the last few years, we will on occasion, every few months, we will do free events just open to the community. Like a robot battle challenge, for instance, and we'll open that up to the general community and it's free. And we're just doing a free robot battle, come in, experience this. And, you know, of course we talk about our other upcoming programs and stuff, but we have tried to, as much as possible, find ways to make it accessible. One of the nice things too, is we've worked with quite successfully with some of our local PTAs. I'll give a shout out to Melissa Greenberg. Hey, she runs one of the PTAs at one of the local schools, and she's been amazing at finding ways for to bring our programs into the school so that all of the kids can participate at a very minimal cost per student. There is a cost, but we're talking like $10. So it's something that's accessible even for the lower income families, that they can have their kids participate in those kind of things. And so in that way, we've been very fortunate in making some good contacts within the PTA and having them do that. Melissa's just one great example. And, you know, we're going back to their school in January and going to be doing some really cool projects there with them. And, so by doing that, we're able to start, you know, we're able to do it on a small scale. I think with the sponsorship program, that's where we're going to be able to really blow it up large scale. But we're also partnering up with some cities too. We just had a meeting with, 2 weeks ago with the city of Paris in Southern California. And we're talking about putting together some programs that's sponsored by the city in which we can get some of the kids to come in the local community. And Paris is it has a lower income demographic. So it'll definitely benefit a lot of kids. So we do what we can, but I think that sponsorship program is what's really going to blow it out of the water.
Right. How do you plan to measure the success and impact of your education programs on low income families?
I think it's going to be in terms of numbers. And then also we're going to be following up with them after to see what, you know, what what benefits did they see? Because one of our things, we definitely want all the kids to come out of it feeling more confident. They didn't necessarily have to grasp every concept that we covered. That's not the point. The point is that they come out of it, they experienced it, and now they feel more confident that they see it's something that's accessible to them in the future. And the goal is to follow up with them. We do currently, but we are going to do a better job of that too, in that we can actually, especially since we are going to have to be accountable for that with our sponsors. Sponsors are going to want to see, okay, what was that impact? And so following up with some families, doing some interviews with them afterwards and talking to the students and like, why was it important for you to come to this? And what was the best thing about it? That way we kind of get some feedback from the kids, but also the parents too. And what did they think of it and stuff? Mm-hmm. But just in terms of sheer numbers, I think it's the more students that we see it by default, the better impact we're going to have.
Right. And Mr. James, if listeners want to learn more about your education programs you have in the STEM curriculum, where could they go?
I would say just visit our website. It's includeeducation.com. It's the words include and education put together to form one word with only one E in the middle, includeeducation.com. And they could check out some of our programs there and follow up with us there. If they are in the Temecula area specifically, we do have a learning center that we run there. It's called EEE Centers, short for Equal Enrichment Education. And we do a full homeschool program there with, we provide classes, but we also partner with other providers as well that are the top providers in the community coming together to provide kind of a whole slew of different programs that you could choose from 4 days a week at that campus. So that's a cool way to go. That one would be eeecenters.com for that one. But also follow us on social media. Check us out. It's Include Education on Facebook. We connect with us there, and it can definitely keep up with the stuff we've got coming up.
Thank you so much for that. Mr. James, it was an honor to have you on the podcast today. It really, really was. Again, I want to thank you for being a part of my show today. To inspire others and have them, listen and hopefully, take the words that we say in, also I want to say that, Mr. James is actually going to be a guest speaker at the summit coming up in February 23rd to the 25th that we both will be a part of, and among many others. So that's very exciting. Looking forward to, So I hope everyone has a wonderful night, and until next time, I'll talk to you guys later. Have a good night.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, James.